Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:27 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is January 30th. I thought we'd kick off in China this morning, where the Hang Seng was down a couple of percent, and this is the first good-sized downward dynamic we've seen in quite a while. Now, it's nothing compared to the big weekly upward moves we've had over the course of the last few months, but the more we zoom in, the more clear it is that we've got a short-term overbought condition. So there is plenty of scope for it to unwind the short-term overbought condition. And then, if this trend is going to be fantastically ideal, it would find support in the region of 20,000, which would be the region of the 200-day moving average. But it has plenty of room in which to consolidate and subsequently range around a lot. So it could pull back significantly more than that and still hold the low from back in October. So I think we are at the beginning now of some consolidation because it was driven by the news that the spending in the holiday season. Or the Lunar New Year holiday season in China wasn't particularly record setting. There's been a lot of enthusiasm. There has been just a very clear desire by just about everyone to think that China is going to bounce back with outsized demand for everything in the same manner that we've seen everywhere else in the world. And Alibaba today dropped straight down from that test of the $120 level. And we can also see that $120 has been an area of resistance on previous occasions. So it's certainly the place where investors were looking to take profits, and they did it today. And then it's not simply that demand in China didn't rebound in such a profound manner. But also, of course, we have the Fed's meeting tomorrow. And then that also brings into perspective some of the downward moves that we're seeing in the Adani group of companies. Well, Adani Enterprises really accelerated higher in 2020 and really, all the way through 2022. And then we had this really sizable downside weekly key reversal at the end of last year. And since then, it has done not much more than decline. And we had a little bit of steadier action in here today because the UAE Royals invested about 400 million in the company. But I think we can clearly see that we have the downside weekly key, downside follow through, massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. It's below the 200-day moving average. This is type 2 top formation completion. And really, the only question is how much of right-hand extension, or are we going to get a range below the peak? And it certainly looks like the profound era of appreciation over the last 2 years is over. And then let's look at the power company. So there are two Adani companies in the Nifty, but Adani Power really did accelerate higher in 2022, going from 100 to over 400 in the space of about 4 months is a big move by any definition. But then gapping lower again in here today, and you can also see that there wasn't a lot of trading. Like if we just simply look at the intraday chart, that this is not the kind of chart action that is representative of a liquid asset, and it's very artificial looking, where the price was largely confined to within 1 rupee of trading after the gap lower. So there's obviously, I think this is just another example of the liquidity issues that have been evolving over the last year. And then I thought it was also interesting, and I've posted the clip from Twitter on comment of the day today, where we have the CEO of Starwood Enterprises or Starwood Capital talking and basically saying that they can't possibly continue to raise rates. The knock-on effect that that's going to have on debt servicing would be too profound. And I was very much of the same view a year ago, and they did it anyway. But the reality is that when it comes down to it, it's going to all really all be about spending. And the one thing that is, I think, less remarked upon is not so much that interest rates have gone up, but that there hasn't really been any change to spending habits among government officials. And a lot of the excess social security benefits that people were getting during the pandemic are going to roll off next month. So some of that excess government spending isn't going to be quite as acute going forward. Doesn't mean suddenly that the US government is going to become a bastion of fiscal probity, but certainly there will be some spending changes. And of course, then it's worth just considering that the 10-year yield is still hovering here around 3.5%. And when we zoom out and excuse me, zoom out and look at a weekly chart, well, we can see then that it is bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average, and this is still a really quite consistent uptrend overall. Now, when we think about the S&P 500, well, it was in mildly negative territory in here today. And I suspect there will be additional downside follow-through tomorrow, because I think that what the Fed is going to do is they're going to do what everyone anticipates, which is to reduce the increment of raising interest rates by 25 basis points. But then they will also say that they are not done yet, and that they may go for a couple of additional interest rate hikes. So a lot of the rebound that we've had since October was about pricing in the potential that we're right at the end of the interest rate hiking cycle. It's possible. It's also worth reminding ourselves that when they do stop raising interest rates, that's usually when stock markets underperform most. So, in fact, it might be better news for stock market investors that they are not, in fact, at the end of the interest rate hiking cycle. But certainly, we saw that some of the more speculative portions of the market pulled back in a rather dynamic manner in here today. And the ARK Innovation ETF has been among the better performers. In fact, it had some of its best weeks ever over the course of the last 2 or 3 weeks. And it has now completely unwound the overextension relative to the 200-day moving average, and it's broken that sequence of lower rally highs since the initial counter trend rally in the middle of last year. So now the big question is what's it going to do next? I think that it is more likely than not that we're going to have an extended period of ranging activity. I thought there was sort of an interesting article today about Open Door, where they were bidding well above market for houses in 2021, and now they're trying to offload them at significant discounts. And the share, just like the more speculative portion of the market, has rebounded in quite an impressive manner over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And coming from one to two is an impressive 100% rebound by any stretch of the imagination. And yet, that doesn't mean that the trouble that the company's got itself into has suddenly ended either. So there's been a huge amount of enthusiasm that we're at the end of the interest rate hiking cycle, and therefore there's going to be a lot more visibility on what capital is going to cost, and therefore we can guarantee that there's going to be more speculative appetite when there's more visibility on where interest rates are likely to be. I just don't believe that we're going to see that tomorrow. Now, obviously, inflationary pressures are starting to come back down. But then there are outstanding questions about How persistent will inflation be? And what do central banks have to do to really kill it off? Because the whole question about the sustainability of government debt, well, the only way that that really gets solved is if they kill inflation now. If that's done, then they can bring down the sustainability of the debt issue into a manageable trajectory. If they fail to get inflation under control now, then the debt sustainability issue will really become a very pressing matter in future years. And therefore, that suggests that they really are going to try and get the job done on this occasion. But if that's the rational, reasonable conclusion, then this enthusiasm we've seen for the stock market isn't going to be quite as compelling. And then let's just think about the Nasdaq, where it is right in the region of that 200-day moving average, and it was down 250 points in here today. So this is the first major area of potential resistance, and it is starting to pause. And then let's think about Apple, still the largest company on the index, and it's pulling back from the region of its sequence of lower rally highs and the region of the 200-day moving average, in just the same way that the 1,000-day moving average was an easy area for investors to think about buying. The 200-day moving average is really the first area where people might start to think about taking some profits off. Now let's think a little bit about the commodity sector. So oil prices were down again in here today, easing back from the $90 area. Natural gas is continuing to decline, and it was down again in here today. Now I thought it was looking overstretched a week ago, and I was buying, and was quickly stopped out. And since then, the price is down another 20%. So, this is obviously exceptionally oversold and coming down really quickly. But there isn't really any sign yet that it's over either. And I think that when we then look at European natural gas prices, they're also coming down, although certainly not in as dynamic a manner. And even though the price gapped higher in here today, it closed down on the day, and even that was still up 77 cents. So we're certainly in a volatile energy environment, and a lot of the weakness we're seeing in oil really has to do more with China. And China is also talking about completely removing restrictions on having children. But that's a little bit like bolting the door after bolting the stable door after the horse is gone, because trying to encourage families in China to have more children is exceptionally difficult when the cost of child rearing is so high, and then of course the pressure on housing, the pressure on residents in either the countryside or in the cities. These are all contributing factors in the reasons why people don't have children. So this is obviously going to be problematic for China, and it means that the demographic shift is going to be quite profound over the next 20 years. So it also then puts a bit of a hurry on society and China's government in particular. They really do need to deleverage the property sector, but how they're going to do that and also stimulate the economy without a property tax is a very large and unanswered question. And there is the clear potential that because they did not spend at the same rate as most other countries, then there isn't the same buildup of demand in China as you've had everywhere else. I suspect that there is a big buildup of demand for travel. But is there the same buildup, I wonder, for spending on everyday items? And are you going to have the same demand for movement. You see, one of the reasons why you had this huge build-up of fixed assets appreciation in places like Europe and in the USA was because people were migrating. They were moving from cities to the countryside, and they were moving from city to city. Along the way, they were buying houses and they were upgrading their lifestyles. But that was all on the back of a really big boom in government spending. Now, China has had its biggest deficit ever, and that came out at about $1.3 trillion. But against a background of a population of 1.3 billion, well, then you start using those divisors, and you're looking at not all that much money, really. So when we start to think then about what to expect from China, well, people are definitely going to want to travel, and they're going to want to go out and see the world, just like everyone else. But are they going to be doing it with excess savings, like everywhere else? Or have they been cooped up at home and now face more of a precautionary environment? And there's probably going to have to be a good deal of support for the economy in China in order to really get consumer sentiment back on side. And that's not a positive development for energy. Of course, then that is going to bring front and center the question about whether the Biden administration is in fact going to start buying back. I think there are two ways of thinking about this. There is the energy efficiency and or the green movement who would prefer to have higher fossil fuel prices in order to promote people changing over to batteries and electric. And of course, then you have the producers who would much prefer to have higher prices, provided they're not too high, in order to stimulate profits. So, one way or the other, there is a potential that the US government will in fact be buying, but they haven't started yet. And they're not due to start until February. So, let's see if they actually go ahead and do it. And that will then help to support or at least put a floor under oil prices. But of course, that is on the assumption that the economy doesn't also then move into a recession. The conclusion by most economists over the end of last year and up to now has been that a recession in 23 was inevitable. So it's then a question not of whether there's a recession, but whether it's going to happen in 2023 or 24, and then how deep it will be. Because when we have liquidity conditions like we do right now, where we have a large number of examples of liquidity strains globally, and we have an inverted yield curve that is as inverted as it has been at any time in the last 40 years. And that is a good, reliable indicator for problems. I suspect with that we're going to start to see solvency issues in at some point in this year, and then we'll start to see some issues arising. And a lot of the problem with the excess of jobs versus the number of people working. Well, if people have been getting the larger social security in the USA for the last few years, that's really discouraged people from working. And they're going to be back in the workforce in the not so distant future. So that spread is going to start to contract. I still am very much, I want to see proof. To the contrary, that quantitative tightening does not lead to deflation. We've got three examples now of where that has happened. So I think that it is more likely than not that inflation has peaked, but that what I think is not priced in is that it could easily surprise on the downside. And that would then contribute to really quite a shock in terms of GDP growth. So we're obviously in a rather interesting environment right now because stocks have rebounded and gold is pausing in the region of its previous peaks and oil is a little weaker and bond yields are exceptionally steady. And I think bond investors are willing to bet that inflation has peaked, but we haven't had the migration out of stocks and into bonds enough to for the yield to contract just yet. I think with that I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.